I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I like Senator Cotton and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. I like Senator Joni Ernst. And I like Governor Burgum. And I like Governor Youngkin. I think all of them can do the job of a candidate, and all of them could do the job of a president if need be. And so he's got a long list. It's a very deep bench. But I would like him to pick what we'll call a sort of mainstream conservative experienced voice who has the confidence of the entire party and is solid on national security. So I like those five, six people.
That's all Hugh Hewitt said there. I should have written down the names that he said. Who's going to be Donald Trump's VP? That is the basis of the YouTube live chat poll for today, Monday, April 29th. And I don't usually start the show off with this, but I have questions. I want to know how many of you feel very confident in who that VP pick is going to be. I know that Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump had, I think they rephrase it as brunch in Miami, which could be the name of the movie, the culmination of the Trump DeSantis story could start with, you know, their successes before the primary, and then it gets complicated. Things got a little worked up and complicated there, but then there was brunch in Miami. And then what happened next? I see a lot of people saying that Ron DeSantis, that this was a VP meeting. I don't see it at all. Do you think, Brad, that I want it so bad?
Yeah.
It's not because I don't want it.
It sounds like wishful thinking. I just can't see him being, like, he's just winning so much in Florida. I feel like he wants to stack W's down there before he runs again after
he wouldn't have to stop being the VP because he wasn't going to have to stop being the presidential candidate. He wouldn't have to stop being the governor, to run as the vice president unless they, like, only pass that bill for the presidency. But then that would give him, he won re-election in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a four-year term, so he would be able to serve, like, 1 3/4 of the second term.
Yeah.
I wonder if you don't fulfill your second term if you get to run again.
I don't know. I feel like you have to have enough at least for a whole term to run.
As if he would go become the vice president and be like, I'm going to go back to Florida. I mean, I would. I don't think that Ron DeSantis, gosh, it would be so good to have Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis on the same ticket. Mostly because that would force, 90% of the right side of the aisle Twitter trolls to shut up and focus on the Democrats. When I see a tweet and it's a Trump person dunking on DeSantis, I'm like, you need a hobby.
Yeah.
Learn how to play pickleball. Do something else.
Dunk on Biden.
This ain't it.
Go dunk on Biden.
There's got to be a congressional seat that you can go after with this fervor. When I see DeSantis people, same way, out there talking about how Trump is going to be the end of the party, he's the guy. And Ron DeSantis people, if you are frustrated with that, then you should have beat him. But you couldn't, because this is his time. Donald Trump either has to win this election or lose again to realize that he's not the guy. And that's just the way that the cards are dealt. And I was a DeSantis. I am a DeSantis person. I still am. So who is Donald Trump's vice presidential pick going to be? Doug Burgum, which is funny because I still don't know where he's the governor from. Is it like Dakota something?
Yeah.
North?
North.
North Dakota.
It's the other Dakota.
Burgum? Burgum?
Burgum.
Why don't I know that? I know the stupidest things. That just doesn't stick in my head. And if it doesn't stick in my head, how does it help Donald Trump on the ticket? Some people say money because he's loaded and he would bring in a healthy dose of donors, I suppose. Is North Dakota not in play? Is it in play for both sides? I don't think so. So I hear that one quite a bit. But, I'm going to play this Hugh Hewitt clip again here because I'm...
Cotton and former Secretary of State Cotton, Mike Pompeo. Like Senator Joni Ernst. And I like Governor Burgum. And I like Governor Youngkin. I think all of them...
Other than Youngkin, those are all Midwesterners.
Mm-hmm.
Cotton was Arkansas.
Yes.
Joni Ernst is Iowa. Pompeo is Kansas. I like Mike Pompeo
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that Mike Pompeo is a sleeper for VP. And the only reason why I think that is because in my calculating, I have too much time on my hands. I need a hobby. I don't need a hobby. I need less hobbies. When Mike Pompeo was kind of teetering about on, you know, people were talking about Pompeo is going to make an announcement about his presidential hopes and dreams soon. He said, we're going to, this is what they say. My spouse and I are going to prayerfully consider.
Mm-hmm.
We want what's best for the country. He never, ever crossed the line into, I'm running for president. He wrote a book. He did a book tour. And it was based on the fact that he was not running for president. I think that he talked to Donald Trump. And I've read Pompeo's book. And Pompeo's book has a lot to do with his loyalty to Donald Trump in the midst of all of the other people in Donald Trump's orbit, in his cabinet, that were not loyal. Pompeo was there in the State Department from incredibly early on till the end. You want somebody who is strong in foreign policy? I think Mike Pompeo is a great pick. I also think that I would just like for him to be the Secretary of State again. So we'll see where that goes. Marco Rubio is somebody who I hear a lot of people chatter about. I would love to see Marco Rubio be the vice president. I think that he has a way of speaking about America in a positive light. Do you remember when he was campaigning for president
yes.
in 16? He was talking about, like, I think it was a new American century or something, how he phrased it. But his whole campaign was very forward-looking and hopeful, which is not... 2016 was a Republican and a Democrat party that had to go out and find their candidate. So there's no incumbency to play. Now we have two incumbencies to play. Bizarre. But listening to Marco Rubio speak about his Cuban heritage and what it's like to know the value of America because his family came into it, wasn't born into it, it was refreshing. And he was younger, so he spoke about concerns. I mean, he was speaking about student loans. He was speaking about the cost to raise a family and how America needs to be about families. And it's just not something that you hear a lot of people talking about on the campaign trail. Marco Rubio did that. I also think that he comes up with innovative ideas that he throws out that 80% everybody loves, 20% makes people uncomfortable. But I'd rather have those ideas being thrown out there to be discussed than to have people trying to manufacture the poll tested phrases to go out and say, so you're not silent on the issue that you've spoken on it, but nothing happens. Does it matter, Brad, that it isn't a white man?
It does. To me,
no,
it doesn't matter.
No,
but in the scheme of things.
I know who's getting your vote.
Yeah. In the scheme of things.
It might.
Yeah. I think it does. I really do. Actually, I think that Rubio, of course, the Cuban vote is strong in Miami anyway, which is in Florida. And Florida's going to go red.
Yeah. But it's broader.
Yes.
There are people that are coming to this country or have been in this country who understand that message that aren't specifically Cuban.
Right. But and they've done it the correct way. They've done it the legal way. And that matters to that group. That's why Biden's losing the Hispanic vote, because he's letting all, like, they're like, I had to do all these things to get into this country and I did it the right way and I did it the legal way. And you're just letting all these other people cut in front of the line by breaking the law. That's why he's losing it. Then that, and then you tap on top of that conservative social values. That's why Biden's losing the Hispanic vote. That's why Biden's losing the black vote. So, yeah, I think this does matter. And I think, too, as wrong as the perception is of the Republican Party as being racist or anti-whatever, it's important to show that there are black conservatives, there are Hispanic conservatives, that there are all these people that actually are part of this party. And the party,
female,
that this party isn't the party of old white men. It's actually a really big broad
and
tent.
And that the liberals are the party of old white women and the men who do what they say.
Yeah.
Brad told me to say that.
Yes, I did, but it's correct.
Oh, man.
I'm gonna take credit for any like super intelligent thing you say.
Oh, okay. Was that one of them?
Yeah.
Isn't that true, though? Like, the whole, like, that there is a contingent of angry women in this country, and there are a lot of things that these women have in common, and they're generally things that step outside of the traditional gender roles that not just Americans have used or enjoyed or whatever followed. It's just like, since the beginning of time, there have been gender roles for men and gender roles for women. And the thing that I love the most about the feminist movement that took place in the 70s and the 80s is it went and made it so that women could choose to do the things that they wanted to do. That because you were born a woman didn't mean that you were required to have dinner on the table at 5 o'clock and, you know, take your husband's briefcase when he walks in, have the kids all clean and prepped to sit down and be quiet while your husband enjoys his home-cooked meal, and then you clean up and then make sure that he enjoys his whole evening. I mean, that's such a beaver cleaver kind of way to look at things. But there are women who want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they should be able to do that. If that's what they want to do, the idea of feminism was, it's on you. You choose. You want to go be in a boardroom and sit at a boardroom table? Guess what? We're going to look at women and their input and men and their input, and we're going to weigh them equally based on the work they put in, the thought that they put into whatever it is you're deciding. But women can be at the boardroom table, and women can be heard at the boardroom table if they want to. And then you have women who try to do a little bit of both. I'm one of them. And it's not easy. Would it be easier for me if I stayed at home and cleaned my house and raised my kids? I actually don't think so. I don't think that I would be able to handle that. I don't think that that would be entirely fulfilling for me. So I get to choose to do both. And I'm grateful to have an employer that encourages me to do that. If I had an employer that was like, no, you need to give up your family and not attend to your children because work is more important, guess what? It's on me to find a better employer. And if an employer treats the women that work for them in that kind of way, they're not going to have women who want to work for them who also want to have families, and that's going to be their loss. That's the free market and feminism working hand in hand. Well, we have postmodern feminism right now that really just, it's very much so kind of a reparational type of a thought process, which is there is an anger that exists among women. And somehow or another, we've gotten past postmodern feminism into the place where women are now told when to be quiet about things that they're not comfortable with because men are coming in to do them. Isn't that outrageous? You'd have to, you know, shake awake those feminists that came somewhere in between the 50s and the 60s, around the 70s and the 80s, and be like, look at this. I see them on Twitter from time to time being like, what was it that we were fighting for again? Because this isn't it. I've said this before, I'll say it again. When Nikki Haley was on the screen and in my home, and my 7-year-old daughter saw her and asked who she was, I said, that's Nikki Haley. She's running to be the president. And she said, girls can be president too. You know why she didn't think that? Because they've never done it. And seeing Nikki Haley on my TV screen made my daughter realize that since she's a girl, if she wanted to, she could run for president of the United States too. That means something to me. That is valuable. It's not everything. But I don't think that it is completely and totally nothing like some people on the right would have you think. Because getting into these binary conversations, no pun intended, where it's like there are people, I don't know, Brad, if you see these people on Twitter, social media as well, but people who are like, would advocate for a white man to be the vice president just for the sake of sticking it to the people who say that it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense
to me.
That's
not it either.
No.
That's not it either. How about, hear me out, we just find the best person for the job. And then whatever they are, they are. And then, my favorite thing, you choose that person because they are the best person for it, and you just call scoreboard. And you go, here's why. Bing, 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 bing. And then you go, oh, they are the best person for the job. And they happen to be a white man. Or they happen to be a black woman. Winsome Sears, Virginia. Ship that to Washington, D.C. I would love to watch that unfold.
She's crushing it.
Yes,
over there.
I would love to watch that unfold. Whatever, whomever the VP pick is, I'm curious if you think you know who it's going to be. I don't. My answer to this question is an emphatic no. I do not think I know who Donald Trump's VP pick is going to be. I have no idea, and I'm trying really hard to suppress my wants from the reality of somebody who they pick is going to be, I'm going to go, why did they pick that person? I called Kamala Harris as Joe Biden's VP because I said, the day she dropped out of the race for the primary, you could go back to that, the podcast from that show. I was elated because we weren't going to have to hear from Kamala Harris anymore because she was insufferable. And then when we started talking about VP picks and he was like, going to have to pick a woman of color, I'm like, it's going to be Kamala Harris just to personally assail my ears for however long we're going to end. Boom. So I wish I had some sort of intuition about Donald Trump's VP pick, but I don't. I don't know. You have to tell me if you think you know. And if you have a confident feeling that it's going to be fill in the blank here, make sure on the Annie Fry YouTube channel you go vote and leave us a comment and tell us if you know who it's going to be. I want to know. Tell me, please. Dying to know. Let's talk to Will Scharf when we come back about that Supreme Court immunity hearing that he was a part of last week. Will Scharf will join the Annie Fry Show in just a few minutes. Don't go away.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the Annie.
I think the court's going to find that presidential immunity exists for President Trump like every other president, but you got to be within the scope of being president. I think they'll send it back to the lower courts to find out exactly what actions fall within presidential immunity and what are considered personal. I think that's the way this will end. It will be some immunity for some of the actions.
Well, Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, speaking there about the Supreme Court hearing that we heard last week, and we thought we have to ask Will Scharf to come on the onto the show with us so that we can ask him about what it was like to listen to these from inside that room, to be able to experience what was discussed. We always get the media version of it. And of course, Will Scharf here is the best of the best for us to be able to get inside and see what happened. He's a candidate for Missouri Attorney General, former federal prosecutor for the Eastern District of Missouri, and he's one of Donald Trump's lawyers. Will Scharf, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Annie. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. We're really grateful for it. Give us your thoughts on your experience of that SCOTUS, the Supreme Court hearing last week on the immunity challenge for presidential immunity for Donald Trump.
Yeah, look, the arguments really couldn't have gone better for us. We were really excited coming out of the courtroom, and we were even more excited after we saw this incredible left-wing media like breakdown. When they realized what had happened in the court, it was really cool to see. Basically, this case is about presidential immunity. It came out of the D.C. prosecution into President Trump, which is about President Trump's efforts to investigate election fraud in the aftermath of the 2020 election. Our argument is basically what you just heard Lindsey Graham lay out, that for official acts in office, for a president's official acts, he can't be prosecuted unless he's first impeached and convicted by the House and Senate. We believe that naturally follows from the Constitution. It's supported by hundreds of years of case law and practice. And yet, when we first filed this motion to dismiss in the district court last fall, the media, the mainstream media and sort of leftist legal commentators all laughed at us, said it was a stupid motion. Then we got to the Supreme Court last week, and we believe we have a majority of justices ready to rule on our side. So it was a great day. It was a fun day. My colleague John Sauer argued for us. Another Missouri lawyer did an incredible job. And it was great to be at the table and to get to help with some of the strategic decisions that went into that and just be part of the team.
Can you explain to us folks who will never know what it's like to be inside that room? Like, what is this? You've got the Supreme Court justices right there. What is the room look like when you're participating in something like that?
So it's a beautiful room. It's this sort of incredible, very high-ceilinged room. There are these sort of like stone carvings up towards the roof. The gallery is sort of packed with lawyers and members of the public, but it's a relatively small room. It probably seats a couple hundred. And then counsel's table, you're really right up against the bench where all the judges sit. So when you're arguing from the podium, you know, you're maybe 5-10 feet away from the justices, and they sort of wrap around you. So just keeping track of all of them and keeping track of their questions, it's a really daunting process. And it was interesting just seeing their reactions, their facial reactions. As counsel argued different things, seeing the interactions between and among the justices. I've been there before, but for this case especially, it was just it was great to be a part of the team, and it's a humbling experience.
Yeah, it seems like, especially from your description there, that it's an incredibly intimate setting, and to be able to have these conversations with these justices where their facial expressions might direct your next response or the way you order your words the next time you speak with them, but also I would assume a somewhat intimidating environment to walk into the first time. But I'm not going to answer my question for you. I'm going to ask you this question. Is it intimidating? And if it is intimidating, is it the presence of the justices? Is it the actual system with which you guys are having an actual conversation between human beings that will decide something incredibly impactful for the direction of the country. I mean, does that intimidation factor into a day like last Thursday?
Yeah, you know, this case to us, it's even bigger than President Trump or this prosecution. It really is about the office of the presidency of the United States, about our constitutional order. And it was, I don't know if intimidating is the right word, but it was a heavy burden to bear for really our entire team. And as we mooted this case, as we prepared for oral arguments, it was really on our mind that, you know, we had to do our best because literally the Constitution was online. I'll tell you one thing, you know, I in court, I always try to sort of maintain a very stony face. You know, you don't want to laugh or chuckle or, you know, pull faces or anything
that's
like that.
That's the same way we operate here on the show. That's good.
It's a serious thing and you're representing a serious client. At one point, Clarence Thomas broke me. He was asking a question to Michael Dreeben, the counsel for the special counsel's office. And he mentions Operation Mongoose, which I'm assuming no one in the courtroom knew about, but I actually studied when I was in college. Mongoose was this harebrained CIA scheme in the 1950s and 60s to assassinate Fidel Castro with like exploding cigars and trying to make his beard fall out and like all of this like crazy old school CIA stuff. So I cracked a smile for about a second and a half when Clarence Thomas mentioned Operation Mongoose. But other than that, you know, we got in, we thought it went really, really well to the point where we actually waived our chance for rebuttal. That after the special counsel was done, we counted votes. We thought we knew where the justices were and we decided not even to take a chance at rebuttal arguments, which is very uncommon at the Supreme Court. So really, the arguments couldn't have gone any better for our side. And we're eagerly awaiting the Supreme Court's opinion, which we'll probably get in June.
So we're speaking with Will Scharf, one of Donald Trump's attorneys, was in front of the Supreme Court last week to talk about that presidential immunity. Everything that I consume is through some sort of, I assume, political filter, a news organization, ones I like, news organizations I know that I agree with, ones I don't. And I was flipping through after the arguments were complete on Thursday and kind of going to Fox and going to CNN and it was really interesting, the mood that I was getting, just kind of, I hate this word, but the vibe I was getting from each of those stations. And, you know, it seemed to me like the presidential immunity question, I've heard from Donald Trump, like, if there is no immunity, then we will have a ceremonial president. I believe that's the phrase he uses. And then from the other side, it turned into CNN, and they're fretting over the fact that there might be some presidential immunity here that could protect someone even like Donald Trump should he be the president. And they were saying that if there's immunity on everything, then we would have an imperial presidency. So we have ceremonial on one side, imperial on the other. Is there something in the middle where you assume or hope or intend to see the Supreme Court fall down between those two assessments?
Yeah, I think we have a presidency that is constrained by the structural checks imposed by the U.S. Constitution, by our system of laws, by our system of government. And I think that's held us in good stead for over two centuries of American history. And what's unique and exceptional is this new idea that the way to deal with presidential malfeasance is not through our constitutional system, is not through the checks and balances, the impeachment process, et cetera, set out by our Constitution. It's by trying to throw former presidents into prison. That's never happened before in American history. That's a totally new thing that the left, the Biden administration, has pulled out to go after Donald Trump. And it's worth noting that they didn't start prosecuting him until he was running for president again. So the scariest thing to me is not, you know, it's not that the court might not give us exactly what we want. The scariest thing to me is that if we don't establish this firm doctrine of presidential immunity, that we're going to see just an endless cycle of recriminations and political prosecutions that'll consume our country, that every previous president is going to get criminally prosecuted as soon as he leaves office, that it's just going to be never ending. And I think that's how the republic could die. So that's the scary thing to me. I actually, the Trump team put me on CNN and they put me on CBS last week. You're absolutely right. There's just a totally different perception of what we're dealing with, of what the situation is there. I had to fight with Caitlin Collins in primetime on CNN, which was a deeply, deeply weird experience for me. But yeah, it's sad that that's where we are as a country.
Yeah. Will Scharf with us right now, not with Caitlin Collins, as he was saying earlier, but I'm gonna tune in and go find that interview and just watch and see who makes whom squirm a little bit more in that interview. I've heard that people expect it to be not a 9-0 ruling. I don't know what your anticipation is, and I know better than to ask you to predict, because you always say you don't like to make predictions. But I hear confidence in your reply so far to how you feel this is going to go. But a lot of people saying that this will be remanded back to, I guess, is it the D.C. court, and they'll have to figure out what is a private act and what is an official act. Any chance it gets put back to that court and we find out, oh, they're all private acts and they can continue on with the court case as they were?
So if that were the case, we would then have a right to take another appeal up to the D.C. Circuit and back up to the Supreme Court. So that's kind of how this case is going to move. I think the court is going to set a standard on which acts are immune, which aren't, not in terms of specific acts in the indictment, but in terms of broad principles. They're going to remand that back down. We're going to have to litigate over that. Jack Smith's team wanted to bring this case to trial last January, which was insane. At the very least, we've forced the courts to engage in serious deliberation over these core constitutional issues before they can just throw a former president on trial for his official acts. And I think that deliberative process is going to continue, and I think it's going to continue for a long time now. But fortunately, I think President Trump is going to win the presidency in November. And then these cases should all rightfully be dismissed. And I think that's how this ends.
Will Scharf speaking with us right now. The consequence of the Supreme Court ruling, which we should get sometime, I think I heard you say in June, maybe towards the end of June. There are what, two Jack Smith cases, the J6 one in D.C. and then the Mar-a-Lago one in Florida. Is that correct? Those are the two Jack Smith trials?
That's right. Those are the two Jack Smith ones. And then there's the Georgia prosecution, which is also over 2020 election stuff. And then obviously New York, which is ongoing.
So what kind of reach does the result of this SCOTUS ruling on the immunity have when it comes to everything Donald Trump is facing right now?
Well, we think this would probably dispose of the D.C. prosecution, depending on the exact nature of this decision and also the exact nature of the Supreme Court's decision in another case called Fisher, which is a January 6 case that involves some of the charges that are also brought against President Trump. So the D.C. case, I think, is on very shaky foundation right now. Florida involves some official conduct as well. And if the Supreme Court were to grant us some immunity here or recognize some immunity here, that would have a real impact on Florida. It would also have a huge impact on Georgia, which involves a lot of the same conduct in the aftermath of the 2020 election. So a ruling here by the court along the lines of what we suggested would deal probably not a fatal blow, but a very, very serious blow to the entire campaign of lawfare that's being waged against President Trump.
I want to ask you one last question, because while we're talking about that Mar-a-Lago documents case, I sent you a message, I think towards the end of last week, and they were talking about these documents that were unredacted from Judge Cannon. Is that the right one in Florida?
Yeah, Eileen Cannon.
So there have been some documents that have exposed some connections between the prosecution of Donald Trump there in Florida and a connection directly to Biden's White House. And this is so Will Scharf. He's like, oh, I wrote a paper on this a year ago. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, well, I need to know about this from you. Will, talk to us just briefly here about what is going on with those documents that have been released here in the last week or so in Florida and what that means for the Mar-a-Lago case.
So a lot has been unredacted. There's a lot that's been made public for the first time. There are two big ones, though, that I think are worth noting. First, we finally have unredacted documents that relate to what appears to be a very, very serious misuse of power by a member of the prosecution team, that a prosecutor named Jay Bratt, according to court documents that have been released, in an interview with Walt Nauta's attorney. Walt Nauta is President Trump's sort of personal aide and one of his co-defendants. In this interview, Jay Bratt said to Nauta's lawyer, basically that if he couldn't get Nauta to testify, that would torpedo his chances of becoming a judge in D.C., a position that he'd applied to. Hmm. Now, if that's the case, that's a serious, serious misuse of power, and there should be consequences for that. The other unredaction that I think is really important, we're starting to get more information about how these boxes ended up at Mar-a-Lago in the first place. And at least with respect to a lot of them, it turns out that they were shipped to President Trump by the National Archives. So these boxes that they're now saying that President Trump didn't have the right to retain because they should have been sent to the National Archives were sent to President Trump by the National Archives. Hmm. So in order to convict him of a crime, they have to prove not just that he had documents that he wasn't supposed to have, but that he knew he wasn't supposed to have them, and yet he nevertheless retained them. How do you prove that if they were literally shipped to him by the people that they're now saying he should have sent them to? So it complicates the factual picture in this case tremendously. And I think the more that we find out, the more documents that are unredacted, the more that becomes public, the weaker and weaker and weaker that case is going to look.
Man. Well, Sharf, we are so grateful to have you as a connection on this show. We appreciate your time. And we'll get done with this interview, and Brad's going to ask to book you again right after we get done, because you have so much information for us. We're always grateful for it.
No, great to be with you guys. Sorry I can't be in studio today, but really appreciate you having me on.
You have other things to do. We understand that. Well, Sharf, we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks, Annie.
Take care. Donald Trump attorney, also candidate for Missouri Attorney General, former federal prosecutor for the Eastern District of Missouri, Will Sharf, on with us today. Follow him on Twitter at Will Sharf. It's a good follow. I encourage you to check that out. He knows a lot about the Supreme Court, too. He's worked on confirmations of both Justices Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. So he is familiar with those stomping grounds. And we're grateful that he joins us here on the Andy Frey Show with such frequency. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Wiggins America in studio. The Monday roundup. One of the highlights of the week, the wildest ride in the wilderness, coming up with Ryan Wiggins. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Wiggins!
Oh! Monday Roundup! Yeehaw!
This here's the wildest ride in the wilderness!
Yeehaw!
Sure is the wildest ride in the wilderness. It is the Monday Roundup.
Did you get your word talker working right over there?
No, no.
Good.
It was not working.
I was hoping not. It's more fun.
Yeah, it's a Monday, and let's just lean into the fact that I'm doing a terrible job today.
You're not doing a terrible job.
No, I'm supposed to talk for a living. When I don't talk well, I'm doing poorly.
Yeah, but it does create an atmosphere.
It does, yeah. Everybody else enjoys it.
It doesn't make it terrible.
Yeah. It's not something I put on my resume.
You're not a professional talker. You're a professional entertainer.
Oh. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
so whenever you entertain. Mimes.
Thank you. Yeah.
We all do it. And when I do it, you guys give it to me. So
do we? I think we need to do it more.
Okay. Bring it.
Okay. Fair.
Shart.
That's not related to Will Sharf.
No.
That is entirely related to an ad that you messed up a while back.
Big time. And Ruler Foods is still here. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I felt so bad.
That, you know, kudos to them.
I actually had the sales. I'm like, you need to call an apology.
Yes. We do bring that one up pretty often.
You should. It's great.
It was great. It was
one of my worst best moments or best worst moments.
That and the spider falling from the ceiling.
Get over that.
Are like the two that I'm like, oh man, you got to go see that one. All right. So the Monday roundup, this is the stuff you missed over the weekend. The most important things that you missed over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Number one is that Gen Z has email anxiety.
I qualify.
Do you really? Oh, well, my gosh. I thought we were going to make fun of people here.
Well, we can.
Can we make fun of you?
Yeah, absolutely. What does it mean?
Maybe. It says that it's the hardest part of their job. In fact, most...
That's not true
for me. Here's what it says, though. It's the New York Post. It says most folks over 30...
Most what?
Folks?
No!
Over 30... you know,
folks.
Mark Cox says folks. It the same way as I do.
Exactly
Mark Cox
my point.
Is a professional.
No, what does Kim St. Ange say? That's what I want to know.
I'm not worried about that.
It's F-O-A-K-S-S. F-O-A-K-S, folks.
In fact, most folks over 30 can still remember feeling a flush of excitement over receiving an email.
That's because we used to just get emails from people.
But due to the digital natives of Generation Z getting electronic correspondence, namely from the office, it is apparently now anxiety-inducing to get emails or to check your emails.
My main personal email has 14,610 unread messages. Let's go to Annie's work email. I'm gonna have to log into this. My work email is probably worse than that. It's not good.
Does that give you anxiety?
Not anymore, because I just quit looking at it.
Yeah, you just ignore it. The problem goes away.
It's stressing me out. The problem is you just get so much crap you don't need.
I will say this, in my earlier
I'm not even
professional
logged into
days,
my work email.
I used to keep a very, very clean inbox. But the older I get, the less I'm able to. And yeah. I think it's probably just because of volume.
Yeah.
So I get that. But it's not anxiety-inducing. And if you're in Gen Z, just note to self, saying this gives me anxiety already makes people roll their eyes.
Here's the thing. Like, first of all, the kids these days, I can say that because I'm in my 40s now.
Yeah.
The kids these days have to name everything.
Yes.
We used to just complain about work sucks, and it included correspondence.
Mm-hmm. And a song from Blink-182.
But, like, when you're talking about email anxiety, aren't you just creating, like, conspiracy theories about yourself whenever you say something like that? Because what you're predicting, the reason you have anxiety, the reason you have the bad feelings is because you're afraid there's something bad in that email.
No.
So you're creating it in your head.
No. Not at all.
So what gives you anxiety about it?
I have 14,181 unread emails in my work account.
14,000?
Yes, look, it's right here. Oh
my gosh, I think I have 1,400 maybe.
No.
14,900 in mine.
No, there you go. There you go.
14,900.
Oh, my gosh.
Unread?
Yes, unread.
Yeah, samesies.
And I'm trying to go through as many of them, and I'm looking as many emails as I possibly
can.
That's
the anxiety. That's the crap that people don't want to deal with. It's just it's a mountain of useless work.
See, I interpreted this the same way Brad did, that it was like, oh, no, what's going to be in these emails?
No,
it's not the volume. I get that.
You can't. No, the volume.
Okay. Because if that's the way you approach it, then I
get it. Yeah, it's not. No, listen, if there's something bad in one of these emails, you can't hide from it. It will find you. That's for real. And the sooner I know about it, the sooner I could address it and move on. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the article says...
No, deep dive into the study here. So like page 4 is that the survey is 2,000 U.S. office workers between the ages of 18 and 24, Gen Z. They said that it's all about letting the emails pile up.
Yes.
It's exactly what you said.
Yes.
It's exactly what you said.
Yes. Here's an email from Ellen. Ellen, I'm on it. I'm working on it. I'm going to check my emails for the rest of this, but also listen to what you have to say.
Great, great. I'm going to play the whip sound effect here. I'm just giving Brad a little bit of notice. Okay, great job. Man, can I get this in a minute? I pay $400 a week to advertise myself on a billboard to find a girlfriend.
Huh?
No, you're clapping at the article, not my flub.
Advertised?
$400 a week to advertise myself on a billboard. Now you got in my head.
He's panicking.
A billboard. He's just a 70-year-old man, lovelorn Al Gilberti, 70 years old, pays $400 a week for a billboard that seeks marriage and karaoke. Found in Sweetwater, Texas.
It's seeking marriage and karaoke.
It says he's already been a success with Al receiving over 400 calls.
Good
so
for
I
him.
Guess a dollar a week or a dollar per call. And 50 emails in just 2 weeks. And he's leaving it up. But he goes into what he's looking for in a woman. He says, if I meet the right person, I want to look in their eyes and see how they respond. I love Europe. I'd love to go to meet somebody in Europe. I don't know why you're advertising in Texas. But yeah, I'm waiting for the right person to call. So I guess he hasn't gotten that person yet.
I don't think he wants dates.
I think he wants this. I think he wants attention. I think he wants news read about
him. I think he wants attention. Anyway.
He's getting it.
Steve Moore, when we come back, and we're going to find out what's happening to those Columbia protesters. Don't go away.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.